Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Telltale Heart, the Cardiovascular Digest for Pharmacists. I'm Craig Beavers, and joining me again today is another world-class friend, colleague, and mentor to talk about some actual real late-breaking clinical trials that, or a clinical trial that came out of the International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis meeting that just happened about, and by the time this is published, about 2 weeks ago. And so this will be hopefully very timely. I mean, it's going to be so fresh that the paper isn't even out yet. So we're going off of slides and trajectory. And Tara was in the room where it happened to make the hormonal references. But before we jump into the interview, I just want to remind people, you know, please email, like, subscribe, text, Twitter, LinkedIn. Tell us what you like about the content or the podcast. Like, share with your friends, give us a review. You know, any of those housekeeping things would be amazing to help with our processes of making the content better for this podcast. And so we encourage you to do those things like all podcasts. So anyways, now that we've got that piece of housekeeping out of the way, we're going to jump right in. So I'm going to allow Tara to introduce herself. Tara, tell us about who you are, where you work, what do you do, what's your passion in the pharmacy space?
Excellent. Yeah. Hi, my name is Tara Leck. I'm a pharmacist. In my previous life, I have been a CCU pharmacist and manager of an outpatient anticoagulation clinic. And now my current role is to serve as the systems director for anticoagulation services and stewardship for Beth Israel Lahey Health in the greater Boston area. My primary focus was cardiology in the beginning of my career, and then has slowly progressed into more of this niche focus into anticoagulation management, and now evolving into anticoagulation stewardship.
Very good. Very good. This trial was looking at VT management and somewhat acute VT management. Can you provide the audience in your mind or a summation of the current landscape from the acute management VT to set the stage for this trial?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now when patients are presenting usually to the ED or sometimes to their, you know, outside PCP office after a scan, we are, you know, thinking of at least at first, where is this patient going to land for their treatment? So, you know, for low risk patients, we're hoping to keep them out of the hospital. And so trying to start a DOAC as soon as possible, as that's, you know, first line guideline directed treatment for acute VTE. So typically sending them home with either a starter pack of apixaban or rivaroxaban. And then if they need further escalation of care, if they're, you know, intermediate or high risk PE or DVT, then they're usually getting admitted for advanced medical therapies, and then hopefully going home on a DOAC if everything works out for the patient and affordability isn't a major concern.
And so all roads at some point with VTE management, especially in the acute phase, at this point in juncture, it generally lead to direct acting oral anticoagulant. And, you know, warfarin in some instances, for, right, if there is a need to be, and obviously if you have to use warfarin, you have to use some form of volumetric rate heparin. But generally, most people are using direct acting oral anticoagulants at this point. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it's usually, you know, the warfarin would be the last effort if, you know, we've exhausted all options for trying to get a DOAC for the patient. There's, you know, very few indications where warfarin would be preferred, you know, like in our antiphospholipid antibody patients. But for the most part, any patient that can be on a DOAC should be on a DOAC. Unfortunately, for a good number of our patients, cost may still be prohibitive.
And hopefully that will change over time as these get generic. But then, you know, to your point, you mentioned high-risk patients, and I'm not going to belabor this, but we'll just contextualize this a little bit because it may come into the conversation related to the trial. But, you know, high-risk patients, to your point, may have some intervention done to manage their VTE, whether that be, you know, ECOS or some other degree of therapy or, you know, direct thrombolysis or something to that effect. But then at some point, they would end up on a direct acting agent. So just so people are aware, there's definitely outstanding algorithms that exist for the management of these patients. I'm sure if you have a solid anticoagulation stewardship program, you would be thinking about this, both from a VTE in the sense of DVT perspective, but also managing PE. And a lot of sites are evolving to PERTs or pulmonary embolism response teams, which help classify and categorize the type of intervention and what it's going to be from that standpoint. All right, very
Yeah.
good. So
And
that is a good foundation. Would you add anything to that, Tara? Yeah.
I was just going to say, and obviously we have four choices when we think about DOACs. We have the three 10A inhibitors, apixaban, rivaroxaban, edoxaban, and then the DTI dabigatran. But I think, as the case, at least in the US, the primary focus tends to be on use of apixaban or rivaroxaban for this patient population. And that's kind of where, this trial came to light because, we rely a lot on data from Einstein and Amplify, and that's what's kind of guided our use of, these higher intensity dosing periods for rivaroxaban, apixaban, and the ease of transition into the maintenance dosing. Whereas we tend not to rely on edoxaban or dabigatran, since they do require that upfront treatment with a parenteral agent, like usually heparin or low molecular weight heparin, for 5 to 10 days before we can even think about starting the direct oral anticoagulant.
So, clearly most people using rivaroxaban and apixaban do logical challenges. In your mind, are the similarities or the differences between the two, or what do you contextualize, when you're agents or agent selection, especially between these two?
Well, I think, it's interesting to think about that because prior to the COBRA trial, the guidelines have traditionally been agnostic and just said DOAC is first line, but not really driven anyone in one direction or another. So a lot of times it came to patient or provider preferences when selecting the agent for use. So we'd have, a look at the patient's medication list for drug interactions, renal function, tending to, I think, rely more on apixaban for the elderly, frail, or patients with creatinine clearance, less than 50 or, closer to 30. Same thing looking at, potential for gaps in adherence. So if someone is, telling you, "I don't take medications twice a day, I don't think that's going to fit into my lifestyle," then we're looking more towards the once a day, medication, thinking about meals and food and all of that kind of come into play, and then having that shared decision-making conversation with the patient, because the data that we have from Einstein and Amplify kind of show that both of these agents are efficacious, and they do have, a low but rates of clinically relevant non-major bleed and major bleeding associated with them, but we don't really know how one compares to the other, because the trials themselves were, fundamentally different. So they had different enrollment criteria, different ways that they were tracking outcomes for the patients. And then you can always say, "Oh, one group of patient may have been high risk, compared to the other, more cancer patients, more thrombophilia. So maybe that's why we see more, numerically more bleeds with, like, or percentage of bleeds with the rivaroxaban data than with the apixaban data." But it's, trying to compare apples and oranges up to this point.
Which I think speaks to why this trial is important, because it's a head-to-head comparison, or one of the importance of it. So let's jump into this. So the COBRA trial that we have been alluding to and dancing around, again, presented relatively recently. You were in the room, got to see it, and I don't think it's published, but their slides are available, and you got to be there, of course. Can you tell us a little bit about the design of the trial and who was included and what was available or what is available to understand the population and how the
Yeah, it was really exciting to be in the room where it happened. And I was actually at ISTH a couple of years ago, where the concept of this project was presented at the Dragon's Den, where they, allow clinicians to pitch ideas, and then one of them will get some funding to move forward. And this one, was really contemporary and something that was very top of mind that the clinicians, want to see, and we knew would be impactful in the care that we give our patients. So what they did with the COBRA trial is they wanted to see, whether apixaban or rivaroxaban was potentially better and within after the reduction of like clinically relevant bleeding events in that first 3 months of treatment. So the CanVector group, in line with INVENT, INVITE, and THANS, which are all different organizations from across the globe, did this multinational collaboration. So it included patients from Canada, Australia, and Ireland. And what they went ahead and looked at were patients with acute symptomatic proximal lower extremity DVT or segmental or greater PE. Patients had to be 18 or older and were excluded if, they had creatinine clearance less than 30, active malignancy, weight greater than 120 kilos, or any contraindication to receiving, apixaban or rivaroxaban. And patients could not be on anticoagulation for more than 72 hours before enrollment into the trial. So a really great base to start from.
And so just, and maybe you don't know this, did they exclude patients or allow patients if they had to get like thrombolysis beforehand or got, ECOS or some product or mechanism of management?
That I don't know. But I think that'll be interesting when the paper comes out, like if they're, hopefully we'll clarify some of those finer points of the trial.
Yeah, to help understand the risk, right? Are they high risk, moderate risk? Did they allude to any of that in their characteristics?
Not that I recall.
That's all right. They didn't give all the D. We're working with the data they have, and obviously the devil in the detail. But it's an exciting trial to talk about. So absolutely. So that's a great overview. And so we kind of alluded a little bit to why this is important because it was a prospective head-to-head trial, correct?
Yes. And the primary outcome was
Yeah.
looking at clinically relevant bleeding. That was the composite of major bleeding and clinically relevant non-major bleeding. And then secondary outcomes looked at major bleeding, clinically relevant non-major bleeding, recurrent VTE, VTE deaths, and mortality.
Yeah. So, which is a very similar feel, right? If you think about our other DOAC trials, right? And I know this isn't exactly apples to apples comparison, but in some of the, DOAC trials, then the non-inferiority, we look at bleeding, right? In terms of when they looked at warfarin, that was the kind of the part, one of the major drivers or things you think about in a non-inferiority is like it, it's no different from outcomes, but it's safer. And so they've looked at the bleeding. And we see this a lot in like some of the PCI trials, right? When you think about, DOACs on top of antiplatelet therapy, et cetera. So it's a vocabulary we're very familiar with, right? In the anticoagulation space.
For us as, clinicians, it's like I don't think anyone questions whether they're efficacious. I think all of the,
Sure.
prospective and, retrospective reviews have shown similar rates of efficacy and, low levels of recurrent events, but it's this bleeding that we can't really get the handle on which is truly, potentially better in this space.
And I think you alluded to this. This was an international trial, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And did they have more country, representation in one or the other? Or did they talk about that by chance?
Yeah, so no U.S. patients, but primarily Canada, Australia, and Ireland were the sites
Very good.
for enrollment.
All right, very good. So, what ended up being the outcome of this study with what we have? Again, the paper hasn't been published, but we're working off the slides and what was presented. What did they demonstrate?
So they demonstrated beyond reasonable doubt that apixaban had significantly less clinically relevant bleeding. It was, 3.3% versus 7.2% in the rivaroxaban arm, leading to an odds ratio of 0.44, and the p value was, I think, 0.00001. So there was kind of no question. And, when you look at the baseline characteristics, they're about, 13, 1400 patients in each arm. The average age was 58, but they did point out during the discussion that they did enroll patients upwards of 90 years old. So it'll be interesting to see like the actual standard deviation and, the age ranges for the patients.
Mm-hmm.
Like like 40% female. They did, like we said, they excluded patients that were weight greater than 120 kilos. So the average BMI was around 29. They did look at patients that a subset for creatinine clearance less than 50. That was only about like 4 or 4.5% of patients. So most of the patients did have good renal function. Low percentage, like 2.5%, were on antiplatelets. And then half the patients had, DVT, and then the other were like PE plus or minus DVT, and a good number of unprovoked events as well. So it was a good demographic, like what we would normally see in clinical practice. I think the one thing people might, kind of look at is that it is a younger population. But still, to see that kind of impact with the clinically relevant bleeding was pretty significant. And you can kind of see that shift in the room for people seeing how, this is going to change their practice and really reshape their shared decision-making conversations with patients.
And so when for maybe who don't know, what did they define or what do we traditionally think is clinically relevant thing?
So they use the ISTH definitions for clinically relevant non-major bleeding and then major bleeding. And with the major bleeding, as expected, the incidence for both arms was low, but significantly lower for apixaban, 0.4% versus 2.3%. And then for the clinically relevant non-major bleeding, so those are like the transfusion, strepsin, hemoglobin. That was around like 2-3% for apixaban and 5% for rivaroxaban.
I think you alluded to this, didn't define the outcome by what type of bleed at this point. That may come out in the paper, correct?
Yeah, there's still, I think within like a month or two before ISTH, they had, finished data collection on the last patient. So they're combing through that now. So, when the paper comes out, hopefully we'll get to see the breakdown of GI bleeds, intracranial hemorrhage, extracranial hemorrhage, and see, what was happening to the patients. I think one thing that was interesting when they showed the Kaplan-Meier curve, that they split early and they stayed split. So, within that first, week to month, you're already seeing that difference. It was, by the time the, initial lead-in for the apixaban dosing was done, you saw a small split, and then, at day, 21 and beyond, it persisted and the curve widened. So it's these patients were having events early on and continued to throughout the 3 months of therapy.
How do you think this is going to impact the landscape of acute VTE management? Do you think we're going to prefer apixaban and that's going to be the way?
I think the feeling in the air was that this is going to, impact how we treat these patients. We're potentially going to see changes in the guidelines for what would be first-line therapy for patients. And, with apixaban definitely demonstrating the better safety profile. I think there was some talk too about, potentially could adherence have been an issue. But I think that really gets taken off the table when you see that there was no difference in terms of efficacy. The recurrence rates were low and similar between both arms. So the drug is working. So it wasn't absence of drug that, is leading to these events and putting patients at thromboembolic risk at the same time that we're, decreasing the risk of bleed. And so, yeah, I do think that the guidelines will likely be updated to reflect this, new recommendation that apixaban is going to be the gold standard or, first-line therapy for acute VTE. And, there was some question about the potential implications of adherence and, would maybe patients not taking a twice a day medication have led to lower rates of bleeding. So how did that weigh into the comparison? But I think that really kind of falls to the wayside when you look at the data for VTE recurrence and you see that they're similar between both groups. So you didn't lose any efficacy. So we can't really say that, oh, the potential decrease in bleeding events, was because patients weren't taking the drug because we didn't see any loss of protection from recurrent thromboembolism. And then, there's also the discussion about, how do you talk to patients now? Because oftentimes it was presented as, here are your two options. This one is twice a day, this one is once a day. And that could factor into, patient preferences of, well, I would definitely rather take once a day. That's easier for me. So please, give me rivaroxaban over the apixaban. But now we really need to shift that conversation to hammer home the point that the, inconvenience of taking a medication twice a day is really offset because the risk of bleeding is so much higher for those patients. So making that clear to them that it's not an equivalent trade-off of once versus twice a day. It's you taking this once a day could, almost, double your chance of having a clinically relevant or major bleed.
And Tara, we've kind of seen this effect with some other trials with maybe apixaban having a slight edge. This is the first true prospective head-to-head. Just for the audience in your mind, and we can talk about this, what do you think hypothesize-wise or from a hypothesis standpoint, why do you think apixaban seems to have less bleeding? And how do you explain that to people if they ask or where people talk?
And, I think a lot of the conversation at the conference, goes back to conversations that we've all been having for a long time, looking at, the PK/PD and the dosing, and did they get the dosing right to begin with rivaroxaban? Was it right to go for the once daily with the high peak? Did we need the 3 week lead-in versus a 1 week lead-in? Because what we see is in that first month, the patients bled more on rivaroxaban, but we didn't see any difference in rates of recurrence. So we weren't really protecting the patients longer and better, but we were putting them potentially at risk for more bleeds. So kind of going back to, was that the best dose for this patient population?
I love that conversation about dosing, and there's some great articles about it. And people should investigate them, but I do does make you wonder, especially when you see this. So, do you think people bleed over? And in theory, you shouldn't because it's not the same population. Do you think people bleed over or use this to extrapolate into other populations that we have thrombotic states that you should use DOAC?
I do. I mean, I think, for other thromboembolic events, this kind of makes sense. And then, it's interesting. I'm curious to see if they will go forward because when they originally got the grant for this trial, it was to do this COBRA VTE and then COBRA AFib or AF. So it would be interesting to see if they feel like they still need to do that or if this data kind of bleeds over into that patient population where people are just now in this mindset, like in the head-to-head space, when, patient characteristics are normalized and accounted for, they're going to bleed less when you're given apixaban versus rivaroxaban. But yeah, I do think we'll start to see this mindset creep into other spaces. When they originally got the grant for this project for COBRA, it was to do COBRA VTE and then COBRA AF. But now based on how significant, the difference was in bleeding events, I'm curious if they will go on to do the COBRA AF. And it'll be good to see too when the trial is published, what the data looked like in the older population, because I think that's one of the main differences between our VTE cohort and our AFib cohort is those patients tend to be a little bit older than what we see in the VTE trials. So I'll be curious to see what that subset looks like when this comes out. But I will say it was interesting. I happened to wander into another session while I was at ISTH, and it was entitled Bleeding Risk on Rivaroxaban versus Apixaban in Cancer-Free Older Patients with VTE. So it was kind of like a real-world analysis of this, COBRA platform, but in the elderly patient population. So they looked at bleeding risk of rivaroxaban and apixaban in cancer-free patients that were greater than or equal to 65 years of age, and they broke it into a primary treatment arm of 0 to 6 months, and then a secondary treatment arm of like 6 months to upwards of 5 years.
Wow.
So this was a nationwide Swedish registry study. And so they were looking at patients that had like their first PE or DVT, and it had, I think it was like 7 or 8,000 patients on rivaroxaban and upwards of like 11, 12,000 patients on apixaban. And they followed them from their initial treatment to their, upwards, like I said, of 5 years. And these patients were, I think the mean age was 76, 77, with a range of like 65 to 100, balance of, male versus female. And what they found in terms of, major bleeding, that in the, elderly population, in that first 0 to 6 months, favored apixaban. And then in the secondary treatment, for most patients, that line, we crossed the axis. So the benefit was not as significant after 6 months, except in a few select populations, like I think women still saw the benefit after 6 months. And so that was, I thought very thought-provoking because, it does line up with what we saw in COBRA in the first 3 months, and thinking that it, potentially goes out to the 6 month window. And then after that, we may not see as much of a difference. I think one thing to note is when they looked at this patient population 6 months out, they didn't have data on which patients may have, been chosen to continue on extended reduced dose of DOAC. So that could play into the results. But in that first 6 months, it makes it even more clear that, in the general population, in this elderly population, apixaban is likely going to be your clear winner for these patients. And then this data kind of gave me the reassurance if the curves normalized, bleeding rates were, more similar after 6 months, then patients that are historically on rivaroxaban have likely passed their litmus test if they have not had a bleed, and we don't have
Yeah.
to, rush back to change
No,
everything.
and I'll tell you, it's funny you mentioned the litmus test. That's really what this data is showing, is like if you're gonna bleed early and then probably be okay after that, right? So yeah. So what do you think pharmacists should do with this information?
Right now, I think pharmacists should be educating, take this information to your teams, because not a lot of people know that this data is out now. And it does shift the conversation because it's not pulling from this trial or pulling from that trial. We have head-to-head data now to help guide the conversation and, helping talk to patients about the importance of adherence, because we know that this twice daily medication is going to be, safer and more efficacious for, the majority of these patients. So making sure they understand how to take it twice a day, making sure providers know why we're choosing this up front, and really helping to get this knowledge that we have into clinical practice.
I agree with you. And I think that's the function of what we're doing today. So that's good. Any other thoughts?
No, I just thought this was, really exciting. It was cool to be in the room. Obviously, there's going to be, a big demand, and, we're all anticipating the publication of the final results. But it's interesting, like, kind of what we all thought to see it. And it's funny because some people will say, like, oh, well, we already knew that. And it's like, we did, but we didn't. Like, you could think it and you could try to extrapolate, but now we have, definitive results to have
Yeah,
real conversations. And I
it's
think that's
very,
so cool.
it was very confirmatory, and it's helpful for. So, Tara, what are you currently reading, listening to, or watching that you would recommend that is not related to anticoagulation management?
Oh, I've been reading a lot of books on hiking the Dolomites. I'm actually in a
Oh.
couple of weeks headed up to Italy, and we're doing a hut-to-hut pack
Oh my
trip.
gosh. Take me with you. I'm coming with you. And we can talk about anticoagulation while we hike Italy. And I'll be your guide. I'm
I'll
so
bring my
jealous.
compression stockings on the plane, but
Yes, some
so nice.
anticoagulation forum compression stockings for sure.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's been on
So
my reading list to this these past few weeks to make sure we're prepared and ready to go.
Oh, how fun is that? I can't wait to hear about this when you get back and see the picture. So, if people want to find you on social media or on X or LinkedIn or where can they find you?
Oh, I make it pretty easy. So on LinkedIn, it's just under my name, Tara Lack, or on Blue Sky or X, it's AntiCoag PharmD.
And you have a faculty page, I think, too, correct? Or did I
Yeah.
make that up?
I have a page on
Yeah.
AC Forum,
Yep.
their homepage. And yeah, I am always happy, if people have questions or want to reach out, or I always love to discuss these types of papers or
And
anything anticoag related.
you can hear Tara on lots of anticoagulation education webinars and things. So if you ever want her opinion, Tara, this has been awesome. You're so amazing at all you do, and I appreciate you being on this, and that our paths always cross around these things, and hopefully we'll get to bring you back. So thank you for taking the time.
No, thanks for having me. It's always great to catch up and discuss the latest and greatest in anticoag management.
Well, thank you all for joining today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another topic to be determined. So be excited. Maybe I'll tease it when I get it booked and finalized. But like again, like, subscribe, send to your friends. So thank you so much.